everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tech Can't Save Us, the first in-person Tech Can't Save Us of 2024. If you're hearing that crisp, crisp audio, that's the reason why. Last one was recorded on Riverside, so slightly more tinny quality. As always, I'm joined by my wonderful two co-hosts, and today we're exploring veganism. Well, veganism and the intersection with technology, not just veganism. So yeah, kick it over to Paul. Introduce yourself, explain your journey with veganism.
Yeah, Silicon Sprouts. That's what ChatGPT kicked back at us when we said, give us a podcast title.
Rebecca, and our wonderful producer and co-host.
Rebecca, by way of ChatGPT. Sorry, I didn't mean to take wind out of your sails there, Rebecca. But yeah, I'm Paul, one of your co-hosts here on Tech Can't Save Us, and I'm excited to talk about the intersection of veganism and technology. Over to you, Rebecca.
Thanks, Paul. I'm back with the Tech Can't Save Us crew. It's me, Rebecca Hedman, and I'm quite looking forward to this episode, actually, because I want to feel some inspiration, and I'm looking forward to hearing both of your failed vegan stories.
Fucking hell.
And taking a look at some of the new cool tech that
We're
I found.
We're a minute in, Rebecca, and shots have been fired.
Taking no prisoners in 2024.
Well, I guess I'll start us off with my failed foray into veganism. So yeah, I mean, I was fully vegan for 2 years, like hardcore vegan. This was like, God, the year leading into lockdown and then all of lockdown. And then just as we were coming out was when I broke. So I was vegan for 2 years, like hardcore, cooked all my food, familiar with a lot of the products and tech that we're going to be talking about. Made the choice completely down to climate change factors. Like the animal welfare stuff was nice to have, but it wasn't why I did it. And that's kind of also how I ended up breaking, because I was just like, you know, did more research into it, found out how little our personal impact on climate change is versus corporate greed, and was just like, oh, I'm fucking killing myself from a lot of things I really enjoy doing for this. So I kind of got broken by my brothers at one Christmas offering me a bunch of cheese, and now I'm just fully non-vegan.
We're back to the cheese.
Mate, we're going to do a cheese episode at some point, and it's going to make me so happy.
Actually just had a house party and set out a portion of vegan cheese, or like a whole tray of it, and a portion of regular cheese, and the vegan cheese was far more popular.
So did you go for the I'm not okay that I told you
I
about?
Went for that. I went for...
Did you have Nero Minded?
Honestly, Tasty was another one. I have to come back with all the brands, but there were about like three or four brands of each. And yeah, the vegan was winner by a mile.
To contrast that, for my brother's birthday this weekend, I bought 50 quid's worth of cheese from the Courtyard Dairy in Yorkshire, real cheese, and we ate a lot of real cheese. It was very good.
There you go.
Back to veganism. Paul, what's your journey with veganism? Have you ever tried? Would you try?
Yeah. No, I still flirt with veganism pretty aggressively. I jumped into it actually during lockdown. So, you know, because I was stuck in a room more or less by myself, I was like, let me just do this. And also felt like the planet was trying to teach us a lesson with the pandemic. And yeah, so I started ordering meal kits from Mindful Chef, which I'll talk about a little bit later. Really great tool to get all the vegan materials you need, just like delivered to your doorstep. I think my barrier before and now still is like, can't be arsed to go to the goddamn, you know, grocery store and like get all the individual ingredients, like make my vegan meal. So if it comes to me and there's like five steps and I can do it in a half hour, I will do it. So I think that's something interesting we can talk about in terms of tech enabling veganism. But yeah, gave it a really good go during the pandemic, lost a ton of weight, you know, between like traveling and coming out of the lockdown and just like going out to eat more. And, you know, you're being in social situations and cultural situations where you want to try something new, or everyone else is eating non-vegan. You've had a couple drinks.
Yeah. It's so hard to tell.
Feeling a little loose. You want a little cheese. You know.
When you're at, yeah. Oh, geez, I've just realized how much of my veganism was like being in lockdown.
Yes.
And all of the groceries I'd bought were vegan. So it's like if I want to eat, I got to cook and it's got to be vegan.
Yeah, but give yourself credit, because like having that self-discipline during probably one of the darkest times of all of our lives is like, you know, kudos to you. Like you controlled what you could control in that environment. So I respect that. And I think it's helped my journey since then of like being 80, 90% sort of vegan. Like whenever I can, I'm replacing, you know, I don't really drink dairy milk. I drink nut milk, nut juice as a controversial phrase among my friends lately. And what else? Yeah, like I'll go for the vegan cheese now as much as I can. But if there's regular cheese on hand, maybe I'll still sneak some, as happened at our house party. But yeah, and then now I'm kind of like shifted to mostly being like sort of pescatarian, vegetarian. So I allow myself a good amount of fish over the course of a month. Mostly eat veg. Otherwise, I don't eat any sort of like meat, like red meat or chicken or anything like that, poultry. So yeah. Although I did tried to order some like pumpkin katsu curry the other day and was delivered fried chicken and I ate it. I feel terrible. But it was really, really good.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, you're just going to throw that away otherwise.
That wasn't your fault.
But I got my refund. I got my refund from Uber Eats. So okay. I got another meal coming.
Double.
Yeah. So anyway.
I think before jumping into the first section, I would say, like, for anyone out there who is curious about it, do it. It's objectively better for you. Like, I lost a bunch of weight as well. I felt a lot better. I too have tried, like, I eat meat and cheese now, but I try and like stay as vegan as possible when I'm cooking for myself and stuff, because why not? And yeah, it's just objectively better for you, as much as I do enjoy cheese and meat. So yeah, give it a try if you're vegan curious.
Definite health benefits. I mean, I think I have like dairy induced eczema on my elbows, so like if I eat too much dairy, it's disgusting. Like, yeah. You know, sorry to bring that TMI, but yeah, it's just like I can tell when my skin is like, oh, you should not be eating the products you're eating. And just, it's actually kind of nice because it's like an immediate signal of like, chill out, bro. You know, yeah, too much cheese. So. So first things first, we want to talk about how tech has helped, as we're calling it, culinary veganism, or in other words, how is tech enabling vegan diets? And one thing we're trying this year on the pod, y'all, is to make sure we're giving you really juicy nuggets and tidbits to walk away with, that's a clear value add, a clear takeaway. So for this section, we want everyone to kind of understand a couple different ways that tech is aiding vegan diets in 2024 and beyond. So, you know, sort of bring things together. I mean, I think we've seen like veganism take off. There's even a month dedicated to it now, Veganuary. You see all types of things on the interwebs that are sort of popularizing the month of Veganuary. And first things first, there's lots of apps out there, for example, that give you access to options for plant-based restaurants or cafes. They help you make sense of food labeling for vegan products. And they basically make it easier for individuals to track down what they're eating and all the quality they're in. One example of this is Happy Cow. It's an app that I use that allows you to find sort of vegan-only places and or vegan and vegetarian options. It's a great app. You can look up places near you and then just like hop over to Google Maps and start on your map. I find it really useful if I'm sort of out and about and I'm in a pinch, maybe I'm at an unfamiliar co-working space and I want to find vegan options around the area. So shout out to Happy Cow. I think that's really important. There's loads of other vegan apps out there, but this is just one in terms of just getting access to food that's vegan.
Yeah, and we'll talk through a couple of the others, but I do think that's quite a consistent theme of a lot of this tech. It's just giving you the information and giving you the choice. Because if you have the choice and it's easy, so much of the reason you end up eating cheese or meat is just because of, oh shit, there's nothing else. So as soon as you have that choice, like, yeah, it's a super specific example local to us, but there's a co-working space we go to in Shoreditch that has this little square that has food stalls all around it, and when there was no like vegan or vegetarian option, I'd just be like, oh fuck it, I'll get a chicken skewer or something. And then there, an Indian opened that does really lovely vegan chickpea curry, and so now every time I just get that. And it's as soon as you know and it's easy, it's so much easier to be vegan. So yeah, it's convenience and information is a large part of like a lot of these tech enablement solutions.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for just access to just letting people know that they can go to the grocer and get something that is not meat or dairy, and that they can go to the local cafe or something like that. So
how much has come on in leaps and bounds, like even like 5 years ago, let alone 30 years ago, when you chat to vegans, they're like, I just had to cook every meal. Genuinely, yeah. It was that or eat bread. Rebecca, what was some of the vegan tech that just stood out to you?
I think even when you just mentioned about the options available to vegans now, and one of the interesting things I found that tech has really helped is this 3D printed meat.
I'm really excited for that.
I think it's hitting stores 2024. So this year we'll start to see it like rolling out into stores. But I found online an example of 3D meat that was printed. It was wild salmon.
I'd only ever seen like the beef ones. That is wild.
So this is actually out now. You can actually go and try. There were a few reviews. They were mixed reviews. Someone, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong, so I'll check this quote. But they said it just tasted like nothing. So that was a little disappointing. But I'm glad to see that it's available in the stores and that they are working towards these solutions. And it's quite good because actually 3D printing uses somewhere between 77 to 86% less carbon dioxide and then 90% less fresh water than the conventional process with trying to catch wild caught salmon. So that was quite interesting to me. And I think we've explored a little bit. We've talked about 3D printing a little bit. So to see it being used in this way and to help vegans and give them more options, I think is really interesting. And there's some nice sustainability behind that as well. You know, with the carbon dioxide emissions. So yeah, I was pleased to see that.
My prediction on this is like, this is where we're all heading. Like there's no way in like 50 years we're still going to be using as resource intensive. And I shouldn't say no way, because that's going to be quoted back to me in 50 years, but I guess I'll be 80 something and I won't care. But maybe I will. Maybe we'll extend lifetimes.
Really obnoxious grandkids.
Yeah. Like, I mean, have you met me? My grandkids are definitely going to be obnoxious.
50 years ago on a podcast episode.
Yeah. But that said, I just think like really bullish on this stuff, because I think when you see these like comparisons, they do this, try this vegan meat thing, it's just getting better and better like every single year. And like the cheese that I mentioned as an example, the meats are getting there. And it's like, what else is there? Look at milk. Oat milk is crushing it. All the other milks are crushing it. Like, I'd love to actually look at the numbers in terms of the milk share. But yeah, I think that I'm really bullish on the 3D printed meats thing.
And so often the review you mentioned of garlic tastes like nothing, it's like so often either posted by a gammon or someone who genuinely works for the meat industry. And I do think we'll sort of touch upon this in the second section, but there is a very weird thing with veganism where the media hates it and uses it almost as like a boogeyman of like woke millennial bullshit to use as a punching bag. And so often when I see reviews or whatever, I'm like, I'm going to try this myself, because I can't trust anything that anyone online says about this, because it's become a weirdly polarized issue where it's like it just shouldn't be. But yeah, I the 3D printed meats, I'm really excited for. If I could eat a burger or something that tastes like a burger and doesn't have the impact, like that would be the dream for me. No animal's been killed for it, and it has all the carbon and water reduction that you mentioned, Rebecca. That's the dream for me. Guilt-free cheese, like, fuck yeah. More than anything else, that's where it doesn't even become a question of, do I cook vegan or do I cook meat? It's just like, well, I'll just get the lab-grown meat that is essentially the impact of vegan every time, and I'll pay for it. Like, I don't mind that. Whereas like, oh, do I want a chicken or a chickpea curry? It is a bit of a different decision matrix.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's exciting to see. I think that the distinction between like lab grown and whether that's vegan or not is a really difficult one, and I think some vegans do align with lab grown meat and I think that some don't, but I would have to agree with you in that it's better for the emissions, it's more sustainable, and I don't see an issue with it. So I'm looking forward to see the developments, and we'll have to keep the listeners updated on what comes with that. Does anyone find any more interesting tech that is helping veganism along its way?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things for me is just like getting the food to market. So like food delivery, I mentioned Mindful Chef before, but we know that UK supermarkets in a weird way subsidize to support more, you know, animal products and through different promotions and store arrangements. So, you know, I think having other options out there and being able to go to Mindful Chef every week and sort of say, hey, I have a, you know, vegan only diet. I want to select these various meals. These meal kits are delivered to my door. I think that's a huge benefit, and it just makes it so easy. It's at cost too. Like you're paying somewhere between like £5 to £10 like per meal, and that can be split between two people. So it's like remarkably actually affordable. I wish they actually got more press about how affordable they've made it, because I think the bad rap on veganism is it's like wildly expensive. And yes, there is downward pressure on supermarkets and other distributors to like, you know, basically subsidize these meat options and dairy options and stuff like that.
The government has a huge amount of subsidies in the UK in particular, and actually US as well. Fucking wild. Like, yeah, that's why vegan food is often more expensive, because they don't get, you know, half of their costs covered by the government.
Yeah, but to the point about like some of the other options like vegan cheese and vegan meat, I think some of the interesting stuff we found in our research is about like just changing the marketing around it, not labeling everything healthy and vegan and saying, actually, this is like a really delicious product. Like, talk about the vegan cheese that we had at the house party and how this, you know, the blue cheese is like, you know, it's got that great salty taste, and it's, you know, it's got that tang to it that people really like. Talk about the ways it's actually really good food. I think at the end of the day, these vegan alternatives are just going to have to be good enough in some ways to start taking a market share, and to some extent be better to win, to really beat out these other options, because people are so used to the good enough or really great, you know, meat and dairy options. And so I think there's a good enough piece of like, does this taste and feel close enough to what you're used to thinking quality is? And then the quality piece is like, does it take to the next level? Is it somehow, you know, because of the way it's engineered, a little bit tastier than the blue cheese you're used to, a little bit creamier? Some of these oat milk options are incredibly creamy, and they outperform some of the like skim and reduced fat options that I've had of regular dairy milk. So if you look at kind of like, how do we engineer things in a healthy way to outperform the current options, I think that's really interesting terrain where tech and veganism are sort of meeting and hopefully growing the vegan movement.
I think as well, like, actually, I think there's been a real resistance to change from a lot of
supermarkets, the government, and all the other stuff we just mentioned, I actually think a lot of vegan brands have done really good jobs of product development. Mm-hmm. Like you know, they're constantly iterating on what you spoke about, like Oatly came out mm-hmm. with this oat milk that everyone loved, and then was like, let's do a barista edition. Like that's a really genius move mm-hmm. that massively increased their market share. So they've really innovated on product. And I also think they actually have some of the best marketing around.
Totally,
their marketing is always really fun, but then they get put into a store by a big supermarket in the UK. And like, to your point, it's all really bland. It's like, oh, healthy. It's nothing about the product that is as exciting as Oatly's advertising then gets communicated in the supermarket, and the supermarket psychology and the planning that goes into stores is you would not believe it how much there is like psychology and where you put things to make people buy them and the messaging you put around it. So it's quite frankly a testament to how good the products are that they have managed to capture any market share, given they actually have quite a resistant sort of sales for like team selling it.
I think there's a really interesting play here for vegan and sort of alternative brands to win on brand. If you ask me about, okay, name alternative milk brand, Oatly is the first one that comes to my mind. If you ask me, and I was drinking milk up until, you know, 2019, 2020. If you ask me to name a traditional milk brand, they're talking to like the child of the people who ran an off license. And I would stock milk all the time. And I would struggle to name traditional milk brands in the US or in the UK, maybe because of the recent past, I've moved away from it so much. But I feel like a lot of people would have a hard time picking a traditional milk brand, you know, as quickly as they would, oh my God, Oatly, I've seen their amazing billboard, or they had this really punny, you know, I didn't buy it, but I read the carton that like made me laugh or something like that. And maybe I tried it one time, you know, so like, there's a lot to be said for like strength of brand to overcome the inertia that is the traditional market.
And I think that vegan brands have to put that extra effort in to make their branding really, really strong. And I've seen a fast food chain called Neat Burger, which is like a vegan fast food chain. And I think they've got quite a few spots, like good locations, and the food is really tasty. But more than that, their branding is really, really strong. And they've actually got quite a few locations, which I haven't seen from many vegan fast food chains here in the UK. I think in the US, correct me if I'm wrong, it's quite popular and it's catching on. But I think here in the UK, that's something we need to catch up to. I mean, Oatly and Alpro, they've been really, really innovative in their branding. But it'd be nice to see that translated into actual like fast food chains or restaurant chains that are vegan, really.
I used to work for one actually that came from the US and came to the UK. And I don't know whether it was just, I mean, this... I probably shouldn't badmouth my old employer. they were not the best run company in the world, but they ultimately failed in trying to take a fast food chain, and it was kind of like McDonald's-ish but vegan. And I don't know whether it was just the, you know, do people really want fast food that's vegan and actually kind of unhealthy for you, or, you know, there's a lot of other questions there. But yeah, there has been some attempts to get that off the ground in the UK, and it didn't work, whereas Biclo in the US is quite like a successful brand and thrives. So yeah, it might just be the UK market's a little behind the US.
So it's important to talk about, when we talk about how tech has enabled veganism, what are the benefits of it? So I think one is obviously carbon savings. So if you look at stats like Global Food Miles, we see that 3 gigatons of, you know, carbon dioxide are essentially utilized for a big chunk of total food emissions. So that's roughly about 19% of total food emissions are attributed to transport. So stuff like the transport of fruit and vegetables, that contributes to about 36% of those food mile emissions. That's around twice the amount of greenhouse gases released during their production. So that's really important to think not just about production, but also about transport and what that means. I think we're seeing alternatives pop up on the positive side. Some of those stats are a bit dire, but you know, regenerative farming, it's not a purely vegan product or solution per se, but it is one of the interesting new technologies that's helping drive a more carbon neutral, carbon positive future as it relates to farming. One example is Soil Capital. It's an ag tech mission-driven company where they have a carbon certification program that unlocks regenerative and resilient food supply chains. They do this by connecting farmers with food and fiber companies committed to kind of rebalancing the agriculture system. I imagine the future will have an entire episode about regenerative farming because it's so deep, but this is sort of just the tip of the iceberg of companies that are really innovating and creating, you wouldn't even think, food and fiber specifically, and how the relationship between farmers and suppliers makes for a more carbon neutral, carbon positive sort of agricultural experience. But it does, and it's really effective. And I think what Soil Capital is doing is really interesting and innovative there.
There's nothing 100% vegan about this, but it is just an interesting thing going on in the kind of the agricultural and supply chain logistics revolution that that's kind of quietly building speed is like there is a lot of focus on just like, okay, we've kind of had the same way of growing avocados for like 200 years. How do we come up with more effective ways that takes up less water, less electricity? So, you know, what one example is this brand, Aqua 4D, that just has a way of growing avocados, which are actually quite carbon footprint heavy if you don't buy them from your local farmer's market where they've been grown in your country. So you save about 30% more water using their approach. And that's more kind of like innovative farming methods and soil nutrition stuff. There's also quite a lot of like stuff going on at the moment with interesting innovations in like vertical farming, like building skyscrapers that can farm stuff on automation, takes away a lot of the like, you know, inner city center, that takes away a lot of the transport costs in both terms of money and carbon footprint. You know, you finish a batch of 10 tons of avocados and you're already in the middle of London. You can just sell those directly to the local Sainsbury's, Tesco's, etc. And the last one that we've got some experience with from the accelerator we're a part of, Block Dojo, there's a lot of people doing stuff of just like proper track and trace where your stuff's come from, what its real carbon footprint is. It used to be very difficult to know that. You'd kind of buy avocados off a middle guy based out of whatever country they're in season in, who would have 20 farms that they're buying it off, who and there could be like 20 more steps in that chain. And eventually you get to a real big time wholesaler and that's who Tesco buys off, but they have no idea whether, like, those could be from Spain, Africa, Southern America, or a combination of. And so there is just a lot more tracking of like, okay, you use stuff on blockchain to know that this avocado was definitely farmed at Bob's farm in Spain and it's come over. So there is just even like an ability to even analyze the data behind the problem, which wasn't there before, you know, 20 years ago. It's just like, we got a shitload of avocados and who knows where they came from.
Strikes me that there's a lot more work to be done in that area. Like maybe blockchain can support this, but just of like driving localism as it relates to carbon neutrality, carbon positivity, and to some extent veganism. So like, let's get a real understanding of, you know, what's behind some of these stats about like food transport costs and what the carbon impact is on those costs. And like, can blockchain be leveraged to drive localism and say, hey, if you, you know, here, like, look at when you buy a flight now, it tells you, you know, what the carbon footprint is of that flight. Could we do the same thing with people's buying options and kind of nudge behaviors, you know, towards, hey, you've got this local option. Almost like, think about how Amazon gives you like a couple used options with a new option, stuff like that. So if you have people on one platform, Amazon's probably moving this direction, ironically, with like Amazon Fresh. Here's a local option. Here's the cost, you know, both in terms of money and in terms of, you know, carbon footprint. And then here are some other options that you can get your avocados from Mexico or you can get your oranges from Spain, but this is what it's going to cost the planet. And will that maybe nudge people to pay a little bit more? Or is there a way to drive the cost down because they see people selecting more local options? But I think the local seasonal push will be, you know, much more effective than just like kind of, all right, here's the data. I still buy the flight that is like relatively the cheapest and, oh, it's nice to see that carbon footprint thing there, but like it doesn't necessarily,
You always carbon offset. Whenever I buy, I always click the like get, take 10 quid to carbon offset.
I don't think it works.
But you know, if you offer that option for like HelloFresh or whoever, like, yeah. That's one route. And the other thing as well that I think is, and that's actually kind of takes on nicely to our next session, is there is a lot of like bullshit and myth busting you need to do with sort of veganism and also just a lot of information in asymmetry. Like I think a lot of people just go, well, I'm eating vegetables, so it's fine. I do feel like there's suddenly the tide is turning and people are aware, like avocados out of season are actually very carbon heavy. I saw a sign in a brunch spot the other day that was like, we don't serve avocados between these months and here's why.
That's great.
It's
people are starting to catch up. But yeah, Rebecca, like what are kind of some of the big vegan myths and food myths to keep an eye on that people maybe need to be aware of?
I think one that stood out to me is even about palm oil. I think that was a really interesting one and quite harrowing because you hear obviously how dangerous and quite detrimental, I would say, the palm oil trade is to the environment, to the planet. But I didn't realize how much of it was in vegan food products and how conscious vegans have to be when they are consuming products that are tailored towards them of this palm oil intake. And it's quite a big debate, actually. I didn't realize how big of a problem this was. So it was quite interesting to see this coming up and that actually more than half of American products contain palm oil, and is relatively the same in the UK as well. So I thought that was interesting, because I thought we always think of vegan movement as being the safest way, the healthiest way, the best for the planet. But actually, when you look at these palm oil products, that is a little bit of a myth.
It's in fucking everything. It's wild. It's in so many products. I'm sure that's probably got better than it used to be. I'm sure it used to be in way more. It's wild.
I don't know if you remember years ago, there was an advert for... oh God, who was it? I don't know who it was. They had a palm oil advert, and it was like the little chimpanzee cartoon. It was like they're chopping all the trees.
Oh no,
to do palm oil.
I'll dig it up.
Yeah. I know there's been major issues with the labor that goes into palm oils and stuff like that, being in some cases child labor or unpaid or low paid labor and stuff like that. So I know that's been a big issue. But I think also one thing I appreciate about how tech and you could argue social media and to some extent as a form of tech is complicating the debate, is saying, okay, you hear something like palm oil and on its face it sounds like, oh, it's palm, so it's trees and it must be vegan, it must be carbon positive, it must be at least
good. I feel attacked.
No. But once you actually dig into it, you're like, whoa, there's a whole racket behind this. And it goes into the whole debate of how industrialized our entire food production system needs to be. And I'm not I love the fact that I can pop down to Simply Fresh or Tesco or Sainsbury's pretty quickly or near my place and get stuff that I want and need. And that's to some extent a product of the industrial system that we have. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we need to have this terrible pillar of, palm oil creation that's endangering workers, fueling deforestation, pushing carbon in the atmosphere in ways that are unsustainable. So I think, how do we mess with these verticals in a positive way to make them more sustainable? Because we still need palm oil, but how do we change the production process?
Yeah, this was a large part of what kind of made me give up on veganism. You had to almost get a PhD in where everything was sourced. And so you had to check for palm oil, you had to know which vegetables were in season and fruit was in season and not. You had to, and we get onto this later, sustainable fashion, so much of it is so bad for the planet. So if you did go vegan, as I did, for carbon offsetting, you just have to learn so much about what is and isn't ethical. And it gets to a point where you're just I literally don't know, because there's five different reviews online that all disagree with each other, because veganism's such a polarizing thing that I don't know whether I can buy this or not. And I just gave up out of exhaustion.
I think there's a lot to be said, and I'd love that you hold yourself to such high standards. It's one of my great pleasures in working with you. But also what's to be said for incrementalism, in the vegan movement. I think sometimes people are really put off by how a lot of vegans come across.
It's so intense.
How do we get people to be 1%, 5%, maybe even 10% better each year in terms of their journey towards where we're all headed? We're all headed towards a future in which we're not slaughtering animals in mass and costing 320 liters of water per avocado. You know what I mean? We know we're going there, but it's how do we bring people along in this journey? How do we give them accessible, tasty options that don't have these intense production processes to get to their door? I think that is a more interesting question in terms of tech enabling veganism than sort of hitting people over the head with these stats. That feels overwhelming. You know what I mean? To be oh, the way you eat is causing all this destruction. I still like bacon. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm still fucking just trying to do the best I can.
I think it's when you hear about people doing extreme diets, and I think one of the things that for me, even dieting and exercising, it has to be something that you can implement into your life and that is sustainable, that you can do forever. So for me, the idea of veganism scares me because it feels extreme, and I really support what you said there, Paul. And if tech can help, make veganism an accessible lifestyle that people can manage and can do every day and can be incorporated into the rest of their lives, then why not? But I think that does have to change with the way that people are a bit forceful in trying to push veganism onto other people. I think it forces the vegan brands as well to be in a place where they feel like they have to be totally transparent and totally above board. And we've seen that that's not always the case with some vegan brands. We've run into issues where there's been scandals, and I think maybe that's stemmed from that these brands feeling like they can't be totally transparent and honest doesn't make it right. But I think that can actually contribute to it significantly.
I think there's something to be said for sort of integration and like mixing, you know, to like one thing, again, I'm shouting out Mindful Chef. They're not the sponsors of this, but maybe they want to be.
And maybe they will be once I'm done with them.
We're definitely going to pop them an email about this podcast afterwards. But
find
like,
Mindful Chef. Fuck it. Shoot your shot.
Just do it. Just do it. You can sponsor me personally, Mindful Chef.
Give me 20 quids of Mindful Chef. Come on.
Send me that voucher. You know you want to. That said, you think about it, a lot of vegan brands are like vegan only, and to the point of like absolutism, like Mindful Chef, you know, you can do a vegan option, you can do kind of like a pescatarian option, you can do, you know, meat and dairy options, stuff like that. And like just having those other options up there, and they look really good. The food photography is amazing. And they're like, we just added this. Some of the recent options they've come out with are really, really delicious. So just having them there, and the person who's like vegan curious or interested can just be like, oh, let me try that one instead of, let me replace this beef heavy meal or this like chicken heavy meal with this vegan option. And if it tastes good and it's on the same platform where they order all their other stuff, then boom, you've got someone now on that journey to veganism.
And I do think most of the good brands have understood that, like Oatly have like, be like, we're cool, we're just fucking cool. We're just trying to create a cool product and cool marketing. The fact we're vegan is almost like a side thing. So yeah, shout out to more brands sort of following that.
Will, did you find any other kind of scandals or myths that were debunked in your research?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've shouted about a lot of brands that are doing really cool stuff and that to emulate. There are some folk that have previously done pretty sketchy stuff. I can also actually speak to this firsthand from kind of having worked in the food industry. Don't Google where I used to work because I'm about to drag them out.
Disregard his previous comments in the
So the big scandal that was in the UK was that there was a bunch of research done testing sort of a lot of vegan products, and they found a lot of, like, I think it was like 10 out of 60, they found traces of egg or dairy or whatever. And quite a lot of that is just down to lax sort of warehouse standards and a general view of like, well, let's just do a vegan option because we have to, not because we actually truly believe in it. So, you know, something like the brands that we mentioned that have very high standards and are vegan first brands, like they weren't in it. It's discount supermarkets, home brand version of vegan sausages actually contains eggs and dairy and stuff. And I saw a bit of this as well in the sort of hospitality industry where it'd be like, you have the vegan burger, but you cook it on the same grill that you put the meat. Like there are specific standards and procedures that you're meant to follow where, and you can't do that. And you have to have a vegan dedicated grill if you're going to do a vegan option. But you know, you tell that to a chef who's working 12 hours, doesn't really care and thinks the whole thing is silly anyway. It's very easy for there to be contamination. So yeah, there's been some unfortunate stuff in the UK in particular. But I mean, you know, we're also the country that had horse meat in its lasagnas that was put as beef. So it's not that. Oh. It's not even the worst food scandal in the last 15 years, is it?
That is.
Yeah, Finn's lasagna.
That's a topic for a whole other day.
Yeah, there's a lot that could be said about the animal welfare piece, and we can leave that for another day. But I think that to me, that's like in the background, like kind of the big scandal, like in terms of how they're treated and sort of how what's happening to them, if we can call them a them. And I do, like, I care a lot about it. For me, my journey of veganism was primarily about the planet and animals, but also health. And I kind of tried to hold the three in the same because I do really care about myself, but also the planet. And I feel like I'm connected to the animals and the planet and my own health, and they're all related. But I think that will actually be a really interesting angle that will drive more people to veganism is like, you know, some of that we talked about the was it PETA's ad during the Christmas special, just like connecting the dots and stuff like that and putting in a cartoon and like people really seeing and understanding what's happened to animals that they objectively care about, you know, when they see them on a farm and they take their kids to the farm or something like that and they're like, oh my god, this is happening to the lovely cow that like my kid pet or the chicken that was like running around. I think that is gonna drive more people into veganism, and so I'm really interested in seeing how tech companies sort of leverage that, not shaming people into it, but just sort of opening their eyes to what's happening and the sort of broader scandal that I think is going on in animal welfare, but then saying, hey, there's these other great options. So it's like, you know, you spur someone to sort of ask themselves a question of like, what's my role in this? And maybe PETA's as an example of that. And then you put all these great options in front of them and it's like, oh, I've made it really easy for you to not make any excuses about this anymore. So
yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's like, here's the information and then here's the alternative. Just so much of this, because industrial farming and a lot of the sort of practices that we have in terms of like both vegan food and regular food and just generally like how we create resources and products are so fucked that as soon as you get public awareness for it, it's a no-brainer to be like, oh wow, we really need to solve that. Like the palm oil one that you spoke about, Rebecca, like there are people now working on alternatives to palm oil in almost every product that has palm oil because the general public won't buy it anymore and is aware of how bad it is. So, you know, that's a win in for sort of activists and information, like, you know, campaigning to make change in the world.
And I think it was Iceland that did the advert. And I think just seeing such a huge brand co-sign an issue like that, you shouldn't take that. I mean, we're all individuals and we should be doing our own research. But to see a huge brand take a stance on something like that, I think is really important and does propel this kind of new tech coming through. So yeah, I'm looking forward to see what these brands come up with in the future and develop to try and resolve some of the issues that we're seeing related to food.
Yeah, on the plus side, it's only going to get easier. You know, every year there's more cool tech that comes out. There's more vegan options in the supermarket and online. You know, it's, yeah, I've certainly been thinking about getting back into it, like fully vegan again. And my girlfriend's not thrilled, but, you know, I look at even where vegan cheese is now versus where it was 3 years ago. And it's like, holy shit, like, you know, there used to only be one good brand and now there's like four or five. This would actually be much easier to do than it was even 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think too, like, to shout out for marketing and branding. Like, we talked about Oatly, we talked about some of these other brands. I put Mindful Chef in that category, another Mindful Chef shout out. but also, like, we have Veganuary, right? Like there's no Meatuary, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's every month right now, right? So, but I mean, I think the fact that, like, they've cornered the market on, like, hey, here's a month when people are looking to make positive changes in their lives. And here's, like, we've come up with a great little sort of branded tagline for what this month could be and, you know, all these different options for you and things like that. And I'm really happy with what I'm seeing and really bullish on the power of marketing branding for the vegan movement going forward. They've learned their lesson to, like, not just beat people over the head with, like, stats and, like, shame, but to say, this is an exciting thing. You can embed your life. And to me, that's the core of good marketing and branding, is like, this isn't just a thing you should buy. This will make you a better person. This will make your life better. And it's exciting to see vegan brands embrace that.
Yeah, in a way, we're kind of almost a testament to the success of the movement that you have casual vegans. Like, it's not people that are hardcore, it's religion. The fact that we probably 90% less meat than our parents did.
Massive.
And it doesn't have to be like the defining characteristic of our sort of personality or lifestyle. I think that's the win.
Yeah, you're talking to a Black American kid who used to chug like whole milk and like eat barbecue like all the time. Like, you know what I mean? I'm talking like ribs, like everything. And now I'm just like,
you turned out fine. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, Jesus. Yeah, yeah. Argument for it. No, but like definitely shifted my thinking and got to me. And like, I think that's connected to just, yeah, who you're at, your identity and who you like see yourself as. And I'm like, I like to think of myself as an eco-minded person who cares about the planet. Okay, well, of course this movement has captured me. And I think the point about casual veganism is a really good one, because if you can just cause that shift in people, like, the overall effect is, you know, yeah, I think absolutism is just challenging in that way. But
well, I think we've talked about some really cool tech and some emerging brands that are coming on, but before we go, do we want to just shout out maybe a brand, a vegan food brand or a food tech or some kind of vegan tech that you guys found or love or just want to say a few words about?
Jesus, you made that sound so formal. Like it was the vegan food brand's funeral. Like, do you want to step up and say a few words about Oatly, dearly departed?
Oh my God.
Oatly's not gone anyway.
I mean, I'll shout out I'm Not Okay, because it's the best vegan cheese I've ever had. They do one called Nero Minded that's like pure black. It's truffle. And it's just incredible. So that would be my shout out, is Nero Minded. What's your fave?
We had Nourish as another one, another vegan brand. And we had some of theirs at our house party. And it was a big one. I'm trying to find the specific one here. It was the plant-based spread that they have, the garlic and herb plant-based spread. That was really nice. Ooh, yeah. I think you have to go to a stockist to get it. And I want to say, like, maybe M&S has it or something like that. But yeah, they had some really good stuff. And it was one of the hits at the party there. So
shout out to M&S. They do some cool stuff with just putting Marmite in things that immediately makes vegan stuff really good.
Oh yeah,
I fucking love Marmite.
Co-op Sainsbury, that's where you can get Nourish. That's Nourish. There,
vegan cheese making me hungry. I'm gonna shout out Is It Vegan, which is like an app that basically lets you test a barcode or a label so you can see whether the product is actually vegan, vegetarian or nothing, to be honest. So I'm going to shout them out. I think they're doing some really cool work, and it just makes like being a vegan a little bit easier.
I could have really done with that 4 years ago. That would have made my life so much easier. Yeah.
There we go.
Shout out. Someone just solved the problem that we're talking about. Like, yeah, what was it? Is It Vegan?
It's called Is It Vegan, yeah.
Definitely going to download that and check it out.
There you go. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to today's show. This is the first show in the studio, and we're looking forward to being back next week. We've got some special things coming up, so do stay subscribed. Make sure you are following us, liking and sharing with your communities and immediate contacts.
Subscribe, especially if you work at Mindful Chef and want to sponsor the podcast.
Yeah, please give us a rating on any of your favorite platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We'd love to see it. And yeah, give us a shout. You can reach us at hello@literalhumans.com or podcast@literalhumans.com to give us ideas for guests, for topics, for shows, things like that. We're very keen on more audience engagement in 2024. Thanks, y'all.
Don't send it to podcast. That goes to your personal email address.
Damn it.
Hello.
Hello.
Don't sell it to Hello. Send it to podcast. Podcast, you'll get a response.
I get podcast too. Yeah. All good.
Cool. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.